This scarf was given to me by my partner's mother back when I was a lay chaplain. It wasn't something that I really used at that time, however. Last week, Reverend Lara suggested giving yourself permission, and I'm taking advantage of that to wear this scarf as a symbol of my role here. In this context, the scarf is purely symbolic and not intended to assume any official meaning. Yeah, I like it. The Touchstones theme... Oh, yeah. I better drape it properly. The Touchstones theme for the month of January focuses on the concepts of authority and leadership. Now, these are both terms that I have had some difficulty with. What do they mean as ideas? What do they mean to me? And what do they mean to us collectively? In preparing for this service, I had to look back at my own history. Beginning in high school, I've been involved in positions of authority and leadership through most of my life, in one way or another. From air cadets, bottle parliament, and prefect at Port Arthur Collegiate, I went on to become an officer in the Canadian Army. Later, whether in union work, LGBT or AIDS activism, or LUF, I seem to have taken on a variety of leadership roles. You would think that after this many years, I would know what I was doing. However, it has always been a learning process, and I have to keep trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. Always learning and relearning. So today, I want to offer some reflections on authority and leadership from a variety of sources, including personal experience. Now, in most religions, authority comes from above. Initially, God or Allah or whatever. And then authority is delegated, usually through a patriarchal power structure. Now, from its earliest beginnings, Unitarian Universalism has been a religion of heresy or choice, choosing to look at religious thought from positions often opposed to orthodoxy. As we look at our current principles and sources, which date only from 1985, we can suggest that authority comes from direct experience of the individual. According to the Unitarian Universalist Association's Commission on Appraisal Report from 2013, lay members of our congregations have always contributed to the ministry and have always enjoyed a certain degree of authority within congregations. Once Ralph Waldo Emerson, in the 19th century, relocated the center of religious authority from the realm of hierarchy to individual experience, that sense of personal authority increased. The Commission defined authority as the ability to influence and bring about growth and change in an institution, or the ability to block and derail growth and change in an institution. Authority, however it is conferred or seized, is the basis of leadership. Within Unitarian Universalism, there are two broad models of leadership. One is the model of lay leadership for those congregations that do not have a minister. The other is shared leadership for congregations that have either a called or consulting minister. And shared leadership is often called shared ministry. However, shared leadership also applies to lay-led congregations. Since the greater the number of empowered lay leaders, the more effective the results. This is the way LUF has operated in the time that I've been here, usually in the time I've been here with a part-time minister. I would suggest that authority rests in each of us as part of this community. There is a yin-yang operating in vibrant congregations, leadership and followership. Both are essential, and each done well enhances the other. Rob Ashgar, a management consultant and writer, likens it to a dance in which each partner's moves are critical to the dance. A dance partner, whether leading or following, can be unskilled and ungracious, but there are also skilled and gracious partners. Such a partner can help lead through his or her follower role. Given the yin-yang, good followers make a leader better, and good leaders help their followers to new levels. Ashgar concludes, the dance metaphor gets us close to that noble but elusive leadership ideal, wherein organizations become arenas in which, no matter our roles, we help one another to shine. As the leader grows in skill, he or she is then able to help the followers to shine. And as they all grow in experience and skill, the interplay grows more productive and life-affirming. Now, leadership is tested through practice in a religious community such as LUF. In the time I've been a member here, I've been involved in a number of roles, including the board, Sunday service, and a number of other committees and duties. By what authority do I fill those roles? And what kind of leadership has that meant? By doing so many things, have I prevented or deterred others from stepping into leadership roles? As I reflect on it, I can see that my life has offered many lessons about these questions along the way. Now, the military provided a certain particular top-down type of leadership where authority comes down the chain of command and followers are required to obey leaders. Subsequently, my involvement in labor and other activist roles has called for a very different approach. In the reading from Thich Nhat Hanh, we find the virtues of cutting off or letting go, love, and insight are important elements in successful leadership. The recently deceased spiritual teacher Ram Dass said, I would like my life to be a statement of love and compassion, and where it isn't, that's where my work lies. I find that that statement means a lot in terms of my own life. Now, one of the sermons in this month's Touchstones material seems particularly relevant, and I want to share parts of that with you. In Guiding from the Heart, the Fundamentals of Servant Leadership, Reverend Tim Kutzmark draws on the work of Robert K. Greenleaf, who explored and wrote on servant leadership. Greenleaf observed that people often become leaders in order to exercise some kind of power. The power of their ideas, the power of their insight, the power of their wants or needs. The goal of leadership is often self-based and self-perpetuating. Perhaps, said Robert Greenleaf, they become leaders because of the need to indulge an unusual power drive or to acquire material possession, or more commonly, to exercise influence over others. As Reverend Tom Rhodes commented in a sermon on servant leadership, we generally see the power of leadership as the power to set goals and then motivate others to achieve them. Unfortunately, too often the goals set by leaders are self-serving. Not so for Greenleaf's servant leader. The servant leader is different in two ways. The servant leader is different in motive and in method. First, the motive, the goal. In this, Greenleaf was explicit. The focus is not on the leader's needs, but on the needs of the team, the organization, and the greater population they serve. It's not about exercising power and position over others. The goal, first and foremost, is serving the needs of others. There's a story of a young mother who asked Mahatma Gandhi to help get her son to stop eating so much sugar. Gandhi told a woman to bring the child back in 2 weeks, and he would talk to him. She did so, and 2 weeks later, Gandhi told the young boy why sugar was bad for him and that he should stop. Afterward, the mother thanked him, but asked why Gandhi insisted on waiting 2 weeks before talking with the child. And Gandhi replied, "It took me 2 weeks to stop using sugar myself. And until then, I couldn't ask your boy to stop." Says Robert Greenleaf, the difference is that servant leadership manifests itself in the care taken to make sure that other people's highest priority needs are being served. The test of a servant leader is to ask, do those served grow as persons? Do they, while being served, become healthier, wiser, freer, more autonomous, more likely themselves to become servants or people who serve? And this is the key. What is the effect on the least privileged in society? Will they benefit or at least not be further deprived? And what would happen if we all lived by these questions? What would happen if businesses and organizations asked these questions before every decision? And do we always ask these questions here at LUF? According to Greenleaf, it is only people with these motives, the true servants of humanity, who should be elevated to the position of leader. Those who are leaders first, who lead for leadership's sake, should be passed over or rejected. True leadership must begin in the practice of serving. It is the people who are servants first who should sit on boards or work as CEOs, managers, ministers, and elected officials. But once there, they must lead with different methods. The method is key for servant leadership. Yes, the servant leader is a visionary. Yes, the servant leader has a dream. Yes, the servant leader intuits where the group or organization or country should go. But the servant leader leads not through being the one in charge, but not through being the one with the answer. They lead through cooperation and in community with others. They lead through facilitating the strengths, ideas, and answers of others, of a team. They lead by helping others make the decisions. Servant leadership places ultimate trust not in one person, but with the ability of a qualified group to choose the right action. The role of the servant leader is to be a supporter, an inspirer, a motivator, a facilitator. Yes, the servant leader may be called to set the course, but never in a vacuum. The servant leader serves the process of discernment rather than being the process of discernment. In fact, ideally, the servant leader is not one person, but many people all working together, with different people stepping into the facilitator or guiding role as their skills and strengths warrant. Leadership is shared and fluid. This demands of us a skill set very different from the traditional leader. This demands that we listen rather than speak, opening to greater wisdom beyond us. This requires developing a sensitivity to people, not just ideas. It requires developing a sensitivity to group dynamics, to the appropriate timing for action, and to the repercussions of what we do. In the end, the motive and methods of servant leadership become a spiritual practice. For, like spiritual practice, it demands that we open our heart to connect to a power and truth greater than our own. Like spiritual practice, it demands a heightened awareness to what is happening within us and around us. Like spiritual practice, it demands compassion. Like spiritual practice, it demands our taking responsibility for a world beyond our immediate one. I want to repeat a statement from that sermon. Ideally, the servant leader is not one person, but many people all working together, with different people stepping into the facilitator or guiding role as their strengths and skills warrant. Leadership is shared and fluid. Now, I think that we are most successful here at LUF when we operate in this way. All of us here have our own skills, knowledge, and talent. When we do the leader-follower dance, the results are dynamic. Another view on leadership as spiritual practice is expressed by Unitarian Universalist minister Eric Walker Wickstrom, who writes, "Leaders are but servants of the wider community." And Wickstrom has given us some valuable advice on leadership in his book, Serving with Grace, Leadership as a Spiritual Practice. I've referred to it before, and in my current sit on the LUF board, I found the lessons in Wickstrom's book to be of enormous help. He opens the book with a chapter on the spirituality of service. He writes, "If spirituality is anything, it is everything. Those who think about their spiritual lives as somehow separate and distinct from the rest of their lives don't yet understand that spirituality is about wholeness. There is no separate spiritual sphere." And he continues, "Seeing church leadership as a spiritual practice gives us one more tool to open our eyes, our minds, and our hearts to the depths of life so that we might more deeply live and love and be in tune with life's steps. And in this way, find our lives and our living transformed." He goes on with a chapter about self-discovery, in which he suggests that we can use leadership to teach us about ourselves, and notes that spiritual practices are pathways of self-discovery. He notes a number of terms that might be more comfortable than leader: facilitator, convener, point person, servant, champion. He points out that we all have different personality types and that this will affect how we relate to each other. And he asks us to raise questions about who we are and to raise questions about who we are in relation to a task to be performed or in relation to the people we are working with. All types are needed. And it's always important to remember that no one type is better than another. I always like his chapter called No is as Sacred as Yes, in which he refers to Pareto's principle that says that 20% of the people do 80% of the work. Although, as some people have suggested, it may feel like 10% of the people do 90% of the work. He also points out that if the same people are doing the work all the time, there is no room for others to get involved. Once you know yourself as you do, where do you want to spend your time and energy? How can your talents best serve your congregation? In a congregation, there are two kinds of tasks: committee work and hands-on tasks. It's important to have clarity about the differences between them and to consider, what do I want to do? What am I good at? Wickstrom quotes Howard Thurman, who writes, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive, and then do that thing. Because what the world needs is people who are alive." Now, the book goes on with other chapters, including a very good one on mindful meetings, and the book contains many practical suggestions. And he offers a comment that I think is useful. Do as much as you can to be as fair as you can, and then be as forgiving as you can when it doesn't work perfectly. Now, I've been contracted by Sunday Services and the board to provide 10 monthly services as a provisional speaker. Well, this is the first of them. We might consider this as an in-between that Reverend Lara made reference to last week. Now, this arrangement will end if we find a professional minister to provide ongoing services. We have Reverend Lara will be here a couple of times between now and June, though she will be here only until then. And just to let you know, you will have a chance to evaluate my performance in June, and though I'm open to feedback at any time. Aside from the issue of professional ministry, we face an ongoing concern here at LUF. Now, for the past 3 years, we've been unable to find anyone willing to step into the role of vice president, with the idea of moving to the presidency. And I wonder if past experience or the way we've looked at leadership has scared people off. I mean, if we look at leadership differently, I know it can be rewarding, and even if it is challenging at times, the more we support each other and work together in either follower or leader roles, the happier and more successful we will be. Now, if any one of you have even the slightest thought of moving into leadership roles, we can offer mentoring or leadership development. In fact, if there is interest, a workshop on leadership can be presented in the coming weeks. And so expressions of interest would be certainly welcome. Now, I'm going to offer in the way that, well, not quite the way that Reverend Sudan did, but a the sermon talk that she used to do on Mondays. I'm going to make that available for people that might be interested. And that will start tomorrow. I won't do it at 11, I'll do it at noon, so it will be a kind of a lunchtime thing. And please bring your own lunch, though. I won't be as capable as Reverend Suzanne with providing goodies. At any rate, I will be here tomorrow by noon to get things going. And at any rate, may we all continue the dance together as we maintain and build this beloved community.